I'm Jamie Cochran.
I'm Leif Babin.
Lead Win.
An Extreme Ownership Podcast.
Here's what we're talking about today. Feedback. And specifically, critical feedback. And helping people realize that feedback is not a threat. In fact, it's actually a gift. So what happens when people want feedback, they ask for feedback, and then they get the feedback they weren't expecting? Because I think what people are looking for is the good feedback. So when they get the negative feedback, it stings a little and it changes our perspective. So what happens when you get that negative feedback?
No one likes feedback. No one likes negative feedback, right? We all want affirmation of that we're awesome, that we're great, that we're smart, that we couldn't have done it better. But we are all allergic to negative feedback, as Jocko often says. And even for us, we teach this stuff. We teach that humility is the most important quality of the leader. We teach that debrief and honest, realistic self-assessment is crucial. And yet, you know, we put on an event or we run some training and we ask for some feedback. And when people give me some honest feedback and it's, you know, hey, you know what? This could have been better. You could have fixed this here. It would have been better to emphasize this point here, spend more time on this thing here. What is my immediate reaction to that? It's instantly defensive. Well, I didn't have time for that. Or, you know, you just didn't understand the genius that we were, you know, the genius of the instruction that we were putting out. So none of us like negative critical feedback. It's a problem for everyone. And yet, if you can open your mind and accept that there may be some valid points to that feedback, it will enable you to get better.
You're totally right, because we tell people the value of seeking feedback. And we actually use the phrase, you have to take a brutally honest self-assessment, which means we have to be open to the feedback we're getting. And yet, it is easier for me to maybe do that for myself. But when I ask people for feedback and I get feedback that doesn't feel good, it's very difficult. My ego is immediately engaged. And I saw this play out at the Women's Assembly, because we ran the first ever event, live event, in-person conference. And so much went into that. So much of my time and my effort and my, you know, for lack of better words, blood, sweat, and tears went into putting on this event. And I cared so much about it. And we do what we do for everything at Echelon Front. We ask for feedback. And I preach on stage about the value of feedback. We need to get this feedback. So we ask for feedback. We get the survey back. And amidst all the amazing comments of people that really found value in the event and got a lot out of it, there's some constructive things, which are good. We can take those and make improvements. And I appreciate those. And then there's standing out this comment. And it was biting, and it was directed specifically to me and the perspective that I had given to this individual. And I realized that despite teaching this and knowing it to be true, my instinct was exactly what everyone else's is. I got immediately defensive and almost arguing with this person on the other end that I don't even know. I don't even know who wrote this, arguing with them for why they were wrong. This is why you're wrong. You don't understand. You have no idea what we went through, and feeling sort of immediately deflated and negating all the other amazing feedback and getting hung up on this one comment. And it took for me to really detach after, I think it was probably a couple days, to be honest, to recognize that this is a gift. This is information that I didn't previously have. And despite how it feels, it gives me something that I can work on. And it made me realize, if I come across this way, if this is someone else's perspective, there's something I can actually do to change that. And despite the effort that that took to get there, at the end of the day, when I got through the sting of it, I felt really grateful that I had gotten that feedback, because it opened my mind to the next event that we were doing on what I could do to make sure that that wasn't the way I came across to anyone else. I think that's what's so hard for people, is putting our ego in check long enough to see the value in the feedback we're getting when it doesn't feel good.
It's so hard to accept that feedback. And it really requires detachment. You have to put your ego in check, because your ego instantly, you know, wants to push back. It's like, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. Look at all this other great feedback that I got. But I think when you can consider, like, are there things that you can do better? Are there things that you can improve? You know, and if there's someone who took something the wrong way or took it out of context, like, could you rephrase what you're saying so that that wouldn't be the case, to make sure that people, you know, don't misunderstand it? We use 360 feedback surveys, and that's really important, I think, to give you some critical feedback from up the chain of command, from across the chain of command, from peers from below you in the chain of command. And that's been a really great tool for us with the leaders and the companies that we work with to really assess people's performance. And you get feedback from below you in the chain of command, from across the chain of command, from your peers, and also from above you in the chain of command, from your boss and your senior leaders. And this is a really powerful tool. Oftentimes, because we use anonymous surveys, you can get some pretty critical and biting feedback. And when that comes in, it's hard to accept. And what you have to do, though, when that does come in is recognize that there may be some things that you can actually take on board. And I got some feedback from one that we ran on me personally as a leader that was that I wasn't contributing to the strategic success of the company. I wasn't doing enough. And that was something that initially I'm like, what are you talking about? This is crazy. Like, can you believe this person wrote this stuff down?
I felt uncomfortable when I read it. I was like, oh boy, that one was rough.
And and look, people lower the boom sometimes. I think sometimes maybe kind of like social media, people will say things that they probably wouldn't say to someone in person, right? So there's on an anonymous survey, people tend to do that. And they can be pretty harsh sometimes. That's the way human beings are. On the other hand, you know, I could get super defensive about that. Like, how dare someone write something? They don't know what's going on. They don't see what's actually happening. You know, I launched this company as an LLC and we grew this company. And for so long, it was me and Jocko. And then it was me, you and Jocko for so long, you know, before we grew. But as I thought about that, I'm like, hey, can I do more to expand the reach and growth of the company? Can I do more to talk about what we do and how we do it and that to help people understand that all of their problems in life are actually leadership problems? Can I help them realize that they're even a problem that they think is an impossible problem that they don't have a solution to? Can I help them better understand that there is actually a leadership solution to that problem that they can get solved and they can move forward in a positive direction? That's what this whole podcast is about, right? Is talking about how you can take these principles, apply them to lead so that you and your team can win. And that applies in business, it applies in life. And so as I thought about that, I'm like, oh, absolutely. There's so much more that I can do. There's so much more that I'm not doing. And so I think for any kind of feedback like that, as you said, it's a gift. It's a gift, and you can get mad about it. You can get frustrated by it, or you can just allow it to, you can accept, okay, what might actually be accurate here? Let me see what I can do moving forward. And you can also let that motivate you to go out and do better as a result.
Yeah. It's extrapolating enough of the truth that you can act on. And then putting aside the part that just hurts your feelings and saying, okay, what's the truth in here that I can focus on putting into action. But you brought something up that I hadn't considered until we were just talking today about the people around you. So I made the comment that when you got that feedback, I read that feedback and I felt defensive of you because of our relationship and having worked with you for 11 years. And that's something that I think we also have to think about, because when I got that comment on the feedback survey, you know what my right hand, Jen Tarantino, said to me? She got defensive and she validated the feelings that I was having in that moment of being defensive and saying, no, this person just has it wrong. So it's something to think about, because while we want to be an ally and I want to be, you know, defensive of you and stand up for you in this comment and help people recognize, the other side of it is like, when you have people around you getting that feedback, what do we do to actually help them? Because if I want to help you, the best thing I can do when those things come up is figure out with you the action plan for what we're going to do to solve it, and not necessarily maybe lean in or help you go down the path of defensiveness and saying, nope, this person just doesn't understand what they're talking about. So also choosing the people around you when that feedback comes, and how are they going to help you navigate that? And are they just going to have your back and be pushing back against it and maybe not allowing you to see the truth of the situation? Or are they going to maybe reflect your emotions a little bit, but then diminish them by saying, okay, this is information we now have. What can we do to make this better? And those are the people you want around you when that feedback comes.
In the book, Dichotomy of Leadership, that Jocko and I wrote as a follow-on to Extreme Ownership, we talk about a business leader that we were working with who had gotten some very negative feedback from his boss. And so their evaluation for their team, their bonuses, their annual bonuses were based on this feedback. And so he thought it was overly harsh, that it was not correct. And he was very frustrated with his boss. And so as we were working together and talking about the feedback that he was getting, I just asked him the question. I was like, is there any truth in this feedback at all? And so initially it was how dare this guy? And he's robbing my team of their bonuses. And it was all of that defensiveness. And as we talked, me and this leader talked about the feedback that he'd gotten from his boss. I said, is there any truth to this? And he thought about it. He detached from his emotions. He put his ego in check and he said, there's definitely some things that we can improve on. And so as we talked about that, what I did was help him see that the things that were valid his boss was talking about, even if he felt like it was overly harsh or overly unfair, he started to work to improve. And what we saw was that his boss observed that. He saw the improvement that was happening and they got much better performance evals going forward. So, you know, you can get mad about things or you can actually take that on board, accept what's valid. And that requires putting your ego in check. It requires putting your emotions in check. So if you're thinking about, you know, if you immediately get defensive, you should be thinking to yourself, like, is this just my ego talking? Is this just my ego causing me to be professional?
Every time.
No question. It absolutely is your ego.
It's a great question to ask yourself, but people will say that all the time when they ask us questions at events is, you know, is this my ego? My answer every time is, of course it's your ego. Every time it's your ego.
Or they say it's probably just my ego. Like take probably out of it because it absolutely is your ego.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest piece for people to figure out is that it's actually as simple as just putting your ego in check. And that's really easy to say. It is very, very hard to do in that moment. And so the question I ask and how do I get better? How do people get better at accepting negative feedback? What are some things that we can do to get better at it?
Well, the first thing is recognize when it's your ego, right? And so when you could put your ego in check, that's going to prevent, I think, a lot of that defensiveness and pushback. And I think the next thing is to consider, is it valid? Like, is there anything that's valid with the feedback that I'm getting? And then if there is, then take that on board so that you can start to implement a solution to make some changes or make some enhancements or improvements so that you can get better going forward. I think those two things are very crucial. And obviously seeking feedback from others so you can validate that. You talked about being cautious on that, and I think that's important. I think there's also a dichotomy here too, though, as well, because I remember when Jocko and I were working on the book Extreme Ownership, and we had put the manuscript together. I think the first copy of the manuscript that you ever saw was a Word document that I went down to a local like FedEx office and had printed out.
I wish I still had that somewhere.
Put in a spiral binder somewhere, yeah. And you know, sent it to you and you got a chance to look at that. So, but we sent that out to a whole lot of people. And, you know, people would come back and they would say, you know, they would be like, this chapter about decentralized command is absolutely the best chapter. And then someone else would say, this chapter about decentralized command is absolutely the worst chapter. You might think about switching it out or taking it out. So you do get different feedback, I think, from different people. And some people like certain things and don't like certain things. And so I think there is, if you're seeking feedback for improvement, I think you do have to see what's valid, what actually makes sense. And sometimes there may be reasons why you don't want to actually accept that feedback or don't want to make some changes. Maybe the person just they didn't understand strategically what you were trying to do or why you were trying to do that. It doesn't mean that it's not valid or that you can't make it better. But I think if you're getting conflicting things where someone is saying, hey, you shouldn't do this, and someone is saying you should, I think you have to really take a step back from a detached perspective and decide, okay, what is the right assessment there? And if you're looking for that kind of feedback, I think, you know, if multiple people are saying, hey, this is great, keep it in there, then one person saying like, hey, that's terrible, take it out, probably shouldn't overweigh the mobile feedback.
100% agree. And I think even before, if you want to get better at accepting feedback, before you make those efforts to go out and ask for feedback and work through your ego when you get that negative feedback, is to start with the feedback you give yourself. So we always say brutally honest self-assessment. If you want to get better at feedback, be your own harshest critic. And then when you get the negative feedback, you're not surprised by it. You're like, yeah, no, I've already recognized that I do this, this, and this, and that I'm not good at this, and I need to do a better job doing this. So starting with yourself and get really good at doing your own debriefs, your own honest and critical feedback using, you know, we have our balance assessment, whatever assessment tools you have for that self-assessment, in spending time there saying, okay, let's talk about this. It didn't go well. Let me think through what I could have done better. Let me think through what I can do better next time. And if you are your biggest critic in that way, the feedback from others when it's constructive or potentially negative or even critical isn't going to sting that bad, because it's going to be things that you're not surprised by. You're going to say, yep, okay, I recognize that in myself, and that's something I'm working.
We work with companies and organizations all the time, and we are constantly learning lessons. Sometimes we're learning a new angle on a lesson we've previously known. Sometimes we realize we need to give a piece of information that we haven't emphasized enough. And that's why we created The Rundown.
The Rundown is an email that we send out every other week. And this isn't your typical newsletter trying to sell you a bunch of stuff. This is simply just a practical breakdown of a leadership principle, how to apply it in a real world situation, and then some action steps that you can take to make sure that you can use this principle to solve your problems through leadership. Go sign up for The Rundown at echelonfront.com.
On. And then to your point, when you do get that biting feedback, it doesn't mean that you have to throw everything out and start over. It means you extrapolate what little bits of truth in that you can to make some adjustments so that you're perceived differently by other people and you can manage whatever feedback you're getting in an effective and reasonable way.
I think that's a fantastic point. And that's really what made Taskin and Bruiser, you know, the Taskin that Jock and I served in together, that made us effective in it, because we were our own harshest critics all the time. And so usually my previous experience in my previous SEAL task unit had been, when the instructors came in and gave some critical feedback, it was, okay, you know, I'd like to see them do better. Or, hey, you know, is that really valid? Or we'll just play the game and we'll just go through the motions and act like we're really taking that on board. And then we'll go overseas and we'll be awesome. And frankly, it wasn't really until I started working with Jocko and all the guys in Taskin and Bruiser where our performance started to take off. And that wasn't because we had more talented guys, that we had more experienced guys. All that was about the same. And yeah, and for my previous SEAL Taskin, what made Taskin and Bruiser exceptional was that we were our own harshest critic. And when training instructors had things to say, we took that feedback on board. We took ownership of problems instead of pointing fingers or casting blame or making excuses or minimizing that it was such an issue. But more importantly, oftentimes when it was time to debrief, we got up to debrief ourselves first, then the instructors get a chance to go, and they didn't have a lot to say after because we had already torn ourselves apart, and not in a way that was just constant negativity or harping on each other, you know, in a way that was morale crushing. It was in a way to help us get better. Hey, we need to fix this. We need to work on this. And, you know, when you've got a team that can really conduct that brutally honest self-assessment and be their own harshest critic, I mean, this is how you're going to constantly improve all the time.
And the response when you get the negative feedback, the easy response, if you can put your ego in check, is extreme ownership. If you approach the negative feedback with extreme ownership, your likelihood of actually taking that feedback on board and making adjustments and finding a way through it is so much higher. And I thought about this because we run this muster event. It's, you know, we'll call it my baby. I care about this thing a lot, right? We started this thing together. And there was one particular event. It was maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 musters ago. But somebody on their feedback survey had marked not, like, less, worse than they expected, which is the first time we have ever received, like, a worse than they expected. And it was one person in thousands of people that had attended a muster. And if you remember my response, I called you and I totally had that sense of defensiveness. I remember trying so hard to take ownership of it, but fighting through the instinct of, like, this guy's got it wrong, because 780 other people said, no, this is the best event we've ever been to. And I think I was trying to take ownership. It was partial. My ego wasn't fully in check because I called you maybe a little frustrated. And I was like, well, I think what we should do is we should give him a partial refund.
I think what we talked about is here's a chance for us to actually take ownership. Like, do you think that gives us the highest moral high ground from a position of ownership?
Yeah. And I hesitate to say this on a public setting because then I don't want a bunch of people to just start marking worse than expected and expecting this. But in that situation, this is the first time we had dealt with this kind of negative feedback for something that we care deeply about. And I got your feedback. You helped me detach and helped me recognize that, hey, this is an opportunity for us to show what we really teach. I emailed that guy. We gave him a full refund and I took ownership after detaching, once I had the moment to get myself in the right mental state, we took ownership of that situation. And we took ownership for his experience at our event and said, hey, if we failed, if you felt like this event didn't deliver on what you were hoping for. And I did not expect to hear from him. I just figured he'd be like, cool, good to go, and move on. And I will never forget his email. I have it saved in my inbox because he responded back. And this is the power of ownership that we teach, and said, wow, I think I'm just now figured out what you guys are meaning by this idea of extreme ownership. And he ended up donating the entire amount to America's Mighty Warriors. And I don't know if he'll ever come back to another event, but I know when he's at a dinner table with people, he's going to talk about that experience and his recognition now of what extreme ownership actually looked like. So when we get that feedback, despite how we feel about it, the only out in that situation is to take ownership of it for ourselves and for the people around us or the people giving us that feedback.
I think what's great about that example too, though, is that this is, it's so hard to do. It's so hard to do because you teach this stuff.
You're I had a humble to call leader.
You. Yeah, you definitely, this is something that you understand the power of detachment. You understand how ego can be an obstacle, that we're seeking feedback. But from my perspective, like you have put in, you know, you and your team have put in thousands of hours of preparation, right? Muster is our 2-day leadership conference. Right? We have hundreds of leaders that are coming to these events. It's months and years of preparation, you know, to get ready for this thing and all the effort that goes into it. And then we take pride in getting amazing feedback from all the leaders that come and be a part of that. So we have one person who gives us some negative feedback. So I think that's something to be aware of too, is that you can, if someone's super emotionally attached to a certain thing or a project or whatever they're actually working on, you know it's going to be harder for them. So that was an easy thing, you know, for me to just ask some earnest questions. And I just simply asked the question. You're the one that came to the conclusion to understand what the right thing would be, you know, in order to do that, in order to do there. And I think it was a real demonstration of the power of extreme ownership.
It's also a good example of using a trusted agent when you're feeling like that. When you get feedback, using someone and going to them and talking through it is what allows you to detach. I think the other side of the coin that we should just touch on is recognizing that getting negative feedback or critical feedback is so difficult for people. How then should we think about giving feedback to other people, knowing that they're likely to have those same reactions?
They're definitely likely to have the same reactions, you know, and I don't know why we think that other people would be different, because, you know, if you came up to me after, you know, I got off stage at the Muster Jam and you're like, Leif, that sucked. You were terrible. You screwed this up. You stuttered and stammered here. You spoke too fast. You said a bunch of times. I'm instantly going to get defensive on that. And yet that's how we often give feedback to other people. It's just super direct. Hey, Jamie, you screwed that up. You know, you need to fix this. Hey, that was unsatisfactory. And knowing that, how would we react to that same feedback? I think that's what you really have to consider, is how would you react to that feedback? We've often said this too from some of the companies that we get to work with, some of the leaders in, particularly in the construction and like energy sector, where people have come up through the ranks and they might be a little rough around the edges, and you might have had a foreman or a supervisor or team leader you worked for who kind of, you know, spoke pretty harshly at you, was pretty direct. And, you know, we hear all the time from people that will say things like, you know, the current generation, you just can't talk to them the way that people talked to us back in the day. And so we'll say, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, you know, if you yell at them, you raise your voice at them all, they get defensive, they get angry, you know, they just shut down, they don't listen to you. And so the question we ask is, hey, did you like it when people yelled at you? And people will pause and reflect on that statement, and no one can honestly say, yes, I liked it when people yelled at me. No one likes it when someone yells at them. So this is not a good way to lead. And you can say what you want about differences in generations, but there's an effective way to lead and there's an ineffective lead. And so when you're giving feedback to someone, you should start by using the indirect approach. And that is to try to take the direct approach would be like, you're terrible, you need to fix yourself. That's the ultimate like head-on direct approach. The indirect approach would be trying to help them reveal the truth to themselves. To say, hey, Jamie, do you think there's a better way that you could describe that, you know, when you're up on stage trying to make that point, get that point across? And then we could talk about it. You start to reveal the truth to yourself. I'm actually asking an earnest question to help you see. Now, if you're not getting it, I can escalate directness if I need to, but I want to start with the most indirect route, because instead of me bashing you over the head with the truth, One of my favorite Jocko quotes that I've heard him say over the last few years is, what good is the truth if no one will listen to you? So even if I'm telling you the truth, I'm giving you some truthful, honest feedback. If you're not willing to listen to me, then what good is that? It doesn't do me any good. So what I need to do is allow you to reveal the truth to yourself. And I can do that by asking earnest questions, trying to get you to see from the perspective of others. And that's going to be a better way to get to the outcome of you accepting critical feedback to improve.
Yeah. Another thing Jocko says all the time is your intent has a smell. So I think if you need to give feedback to someone, make sure that your intent is for the purpose of helping them and giving them the feedback because we know we want them to get better. And do you have the foundation of a good relationship? Do they understand that you care about them? And are they going to recognize that the feedback you're giving them is for their benefit? And to your point, the best way to do that is to ask those earnest questions. I use this with my kids all the time. Like, hey, well, what do you think they were thinking when that happened? Or, hey, how would you feel if this happened to you? Or, hey, what do you think you should have done in this situation? Those types of things can show your intent is real, but also guide them to coming up with that action plan for themselves. And then maybe you don't even have to be the one to give them the feedback because they're recognizing it for themselves and saying, oh yeah, I guess I could have handled that differently. But giving feedback is equally as important. The biggest thing that we can control is how we receive that feedback. So when we get negative feedback, when it's critical, when it stings, detaching from our emotions and recognizing this isn't a threat, this is a gift. This is information we didn't previously have. It's a little bit of the truth that allows us to recognize how people perceive us. And we can control that by taking ownership when we get that feedback.
One of the things that's so hard to do, and you mentioned kids, and this is so hard to do with kids, right? Is, as Jocko says, let your kids brush up against the guardrails of failure. That doesn't mean let your kid run into the highway to learn to look both ways, right? We're not going to let them get run over and killed or seriously injured. But it does mean that, like, instead of, you know, I remember arguing with my toddler about whether or not he should put his jacket on before he goes outside because it's freezing cold outside. And we're going back and forth. I'm arguing with this one to put his jacket on. And I realized, like, hey, it's not going to kill him. Let him go outside with no jacket on. And guess what? 2 minutes later, he comes back. He's like, hey, daddy, can you put my jacket on for me? So you do have to be a little smarter about that. And Jocko did this for me and for the Delta platoon commander, his other platoon commander, Seth Stone in Tasking and Bruiser, when we were out in the desert in our desert warfare training center conducting our immediate action drills, which is like a reactive contact. So we're getting a simulated enemy shooting at us and we have to run a play. And there's like a whole binder. It's like a 3-ring binder of like plays. So if you played soccer or you played football or basketball, this is like running a play. We make a call. Everyone knows what to do. And so Seth and I had been through this training, you know, the year prior to this, and we felt like we kind of knew what was going on. And Jocko asked us, hey, how are you guys doing with your immediate action drills? And we said, oh, we're good to go. We said, we're good to go. Now, he could have said, you guys only have one platoon under your belt. You know, I've got years of experience in the SEAL teams. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, you're arrogant. This is harder than you think. And our minds would have been closed if he said that. We would have gotten defensive. But because Jocko was a good leader, and he wanted to open our minds so that we would actually accept critical feedback, he said, oh, cool. And he let us go out onto the training battlefield. We went out and ran a bunch of live fire immediate action drills, and it did not go very well. And
best lesson.
We fell apart. So we came back, and instead of just, oh, the boss thinks he knows everything, he's trying to tell us what to do, we actually were like, hey, Jocko, let's go over those immediate action drills. We went on the whiteboard, we talked through it, and we learned a ton just in 20 or 30 minutes of just some informal training around the whiteboard, talking about what to do in the event of enemy contact in certain scenarios. But that's a great example, I think, of letting people brush up against the guardrails of failure. If you can allow people to humble themselves, allow them maybe to make some mistakes. So now their mind is open and they're seeking that feedback. And instead of you pushing the feedback on them, they're coming to you to seek that feedback so they can get better.
And speaking of immediate action drills, this one's twofold. The first thing I want you to do is take an honest self-assessment. Spend some time actually looking through what's going on in your life and taking that honest self-assessment of where you're failing and the things that you need to do to improve. And then the second piece is to ask one specific person for some feedback and then don't defend it. Just thank them. Thank them and take that feedback for action and look for how you can implement that feedback in your day-to-day.
I'll take that one step further. If when you get that feedback, break out a notepad and take some notes. Because that shows that you're listening to that person. And now you can actually write down what they're having to say. You can defeat all those defensive thoughts that are in your head. And then you can look later after you can detach from that and put your ego in check and you can examine the feedback and see where it's valid and where you can improve.
And if you do these things, if you think of feedback as a gift, if you take ownership when you get that feedback and you don't get defensive, set your ego, set your emotions aside, you can actually find ways to improve and get better and evolve, which is all the things that we need to be doing as a leader. If you can start to look at critical feedback as a gift, not a threat, a gift, an opportunity for you to get better, and you can accept that feedback and then take ownership of that feedback and actually make some changes in your life, that is how you will lead and win.
So until next time, lead yourself, lead your team, and win.